It's the Burt Cohen Show. The dream is projected on the screen, the movie screens, the movies. The Oscars are happening, of course, and there's also something, oh, no doubt, a lot more important called the Progies. You may not have heard of them unless you listen to the Burt Cohen Show regularly at this time every year. The Progies, well, let's let our guest today, Ed Rampell. Ed, it's great to have you back on here to talk about the Progressive Movie Awards. If you could just introduce those listeners who may not be aware of it, what are the Progies and what is the how do they get chosen?
The Progies are awarded by an international group of left-leaning film critics and film historians and scholars called the James Agee Cinema Circle. And this is the sixth annual awarding of the Progies, which of course is short for progressive. And the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences claims that it awards those coveted golden statuettes on the basis of artistic and technical excellence. And the criteria for the Progies is somewhat different. And the criteria basically is that the films be progressive in the sense of being pro-working class, pro-human rights, anti-war, pro ethnic and minority rights, women's rights, gay rights, pro-environment, and so on. And we also do take into consideration form and aesthetic excellence and scientific achievement, but our main focus really is on the progressive messages of cinema.
And how important is that messaging in American cinema? How much influence do you think it has on the politics and culture of these United States?
Well, I think that that's a really important question. And I think that there is a huge battle going on in the entertainment industry. And there's a big tension between what I call the military-industrial entertainment complex, whereby the Pentagon and the CIA have liaison offices on all of the branches of the U.S. Armed Services have a different liaison officer. It's my understanding that there's a high-rise office building right near UCLA, and they have an entire floor in this high-rise. And basically, the way that it works, and the CIA has a liaison officer at its Langley, Virginia HQ, and the way it works is that if a filmmaker wants to get cooperation, or maybe a better word would be collaboration, with the Defense Department or the Central Intelligence Agency, you have to submit your script for script approval. And if they don't like your script, the military or CIA liaison officer will either just reject it out of hand, if it's anti-war, like Oliver Stone, an actual Vietnam War veteran, has never gotten any assistance from the military, whereas war wimps like Jerry Bruckheimer, who I believe never served in uniform, gets huge amounts of assistance. You could change the script to get the script approval, and then what happens if you are past the muster, so to speak, you get access to the military facilities, like you could shoot at Pearl Harbor, like Bruckheimer did for his awful 2001 movie called Pearl Harbor.
Right.
You get use of their whiz-bang gadgetry, their high-tech equipment, so you could wow people and impress people with the latest high-tech ways to commit mass murder. And you get use of U.S. personnel, and this is all free of charge or low cost. But you must show the military and also the CIA in a favorable light so that when they go hat in hand to Congress begging for more taxpayer dollars to create, to wreak mayhem around the globe, Congress will vote for those appropriations. And so, and also so that you will, you, the filmmaker, will help them to recruit and retain personnel. The CIA does something similar. They have a lot less goodies to give out, but they will give you access to shoot at their headquarters if they like your script. And presumably in the case of Zero Dark Thirty, which there was a big protest against in Hollywood on Sunday, presumably what happens is you might be eligible, and this is an allegation that hasn't been proven yet, for getting inside information, the insider scoop, the inside dope, from the intelligence agency for films like Zero Dark Thirty.
And, you know, I definitely wanted to bring up Zero Dark Thirty, and what you said was is it demonstrates the power of movies that the CIA and, as you call it, the military-industrial entertainment complex knows how important it is to the movies, the Hollywood productions, are to getting their way in Washington. Gore Vidal has written about the connection between Hollywood and Washington and how
Who was that has written about it?
Gore Vidal.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, sadly passed away, but certainly contributed a lot. And the power of Hollywood is very impressive. Now let's talk a little bit before we get into this year's Progy Awards. Zero Dark Thirty protest. Do you know if the military industrial entertainment complex worked with the producers of Zero Dark Thirty?
Well, I've been looking into that, and you know, there were actually congressional allegations at Congress. There was some looking into this, and it's believed that this controversy about the possibility that the Obama administration, the military, et cetera, leaked classified information to director Catherine Bigelow and allegedly to screenwriter Mark Bowl. It's believed that this cost Bigelow a Best Director nomination. And she won that Oscar for The Hurt Locker, which is, we may recall, a few years ago was also the Best Picture. And that's an Iraq war drama that never once looks into, hey, how did we get into Iraq anyway? You know, that was just completely besides the point. But getting back to Zero Dark Thirty, in the story that I did that's at progressive.org about this demonstration, I asked David Clennon, the actor who had co-starred in a CIA TV series on CBS around 2001 called The Agency, about that. And he believes that the answer is yes. That they did receive support. He believes the type of helicopters that are used in the film could not have been gotten because they're very new, state-of-the-art. And they're so effective that one of them crashed, by the way, during the raid, but that's besides the point. And Dave Robb, who wrote the book Operation Hollywood, How the Pentagon Shapes and Censors the Movies, Dave Robb believes that they got inside information from the CIA. So I have to say that these are allegations. They haven't been proven yet.
Right.
And I'm kind of looking into them now.
If you just tuned in to the Burt Cohen Show, our guest today is Ed Rampell, who writes about Hollywood, from Hollywood, about this time we're talking about the Progies coming at the same time as all those other awards few people know about called the Oscars. And on this demonstration near where the place ceremony takes place for about Zero Dark Thirty, do you expect TV coverage, and what groups and or individuals are involved in this protest about Zero Dark Thirty, and what's the message they're trying to convey?
You know, that's a good question, what groups are involved. As I mentioned, the activist actor David Clennon, who, by the way, had parts in some of the great seminal 70s lefty films like Bound for Glory and Coming Home.
Mm.
David Clennon spoke at a gathering at the Hollywood United Methodist Church, which is actually literally across the street from the huge complex where the Dolby Theater is, and that's where the Academy Awards ceremony is going to take place. And other groups that participated in this gathering, and also in this protest, were the National Religious Campaign Against Torture,
right,
and the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. There was a speaker at the gathering. There were probably about 75 people at the church for this event before that led up to the protest. There was an attorney for one of the Guantanamo detainees, a man named Obeidallah. And her name is attorney Cindy Panuco,
right,
of a Pasadena law firm.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something really interesting and noteworthy about Zero Dark Thirty that points out the way that Pentagon propaganda and agitprop works. And she said, and this is a quote, "What's shown in the film is still ongoing. It's not part of history." Now, she's referring to the torture. And then she goes on to say, "Not one character in the movie decried what we did, the violating of laws. The film missed an opportunity," end quote, and that is an opportunity to raise questions about about U.S. torture, enhanced interrogation methods, the conditions of confinement, and how effective torture is. You know, this film, Zero Dark Thirty, Bert, it's really interesting because we're supposed to think, wow, after 10 years, you know, like the RCMP, we finally got our man. But think about it. If this torture was so effective, why did it take the world's most expensive, high-tech intelligence agencies and its best armed military, why did it take them a whole decade to capture one man if torture is so effective?
Hmm. Well, the movie didn't. I haven't seen the movie. I don't plan to see the movie. I don't want to watch torture, and I understand there's like 45 minutes of it. But it doesn't condemn torture, nor does it praise torture, I guess, or does it?
I would say that because the film makes the allegation that it was these torture techniques that led to tracking down Osama bin Laden, that torture is effective and therefore it works, one can argue that this is an endorsement of torture and not just an objective depiction of what happened. Because at this meeting that preceded the Hollywood demo on Sunday, a lot was made of the Senate Intelligence Committee report on related to this matter, a 6,000-page report. According to leaks, it indicates that torture had nothing to do with tracking down bin Laden. Now, that report is classified, whereas this propaganda film went into wide release around the country. And it should be pointed out, it's up for the Best Picture Academy Award and four other Oscars.
Really?
But it should be pointed out that it already won a Golden Globe, as did two other CIA productions, Argo, and also Homeland, which, of course, is a Showtime cable TV series. So it's kind of looking like it's the year of the CIA in the entertainment industry.
I had never heard that before. And I noticed that David Clennon, the actor, was very much involved in the protest. He called Zero Dark Thirty a vigilante adventure, and he denounced the film's despicable message. And it does seem like the vigilante adventure is what the film is about. Never mind the politics of it. Never mind the lack of due process carried out. It seems to kind of rubber stamp what the CIA likes to do, and can't help but increase support for such vigilante adventures.
Also the whole idea that, well, you know, torture may be nasty business and not nice, but the ends justify the means.
Right.
And the question remains, was torture effective? The Senate Intelligence Committee report purportedly states no, it had nothing to do with capturing bin Laden. And by the way, think about this. Supposedly, a lot of the false assertions, I won't even call them statements, I'll just say false assertions about Iraq and WMDs, was made by a torture victim under duress, and then they turned out to be completely, completely unfounded and untrue. So here, America went to war, one of the longest wars in our history, on the basis of lies. That some of those lies came from a torture victim who just wanted the pain to stop. And Bert, I would give you up if I was under torture, by the way. I just want to go on.
Hey, same to you, buddy.
you can't trust what anybody says.
That's true,
under
really.
those kind of conditions. So we see that torture led to disastrous foreign policy. And again, in the case of bin Laden, it took 10 years to capture this guy. How effective is a method that takes such a well-armed, high-tech, expensive agency and military? It takes them 10 years to capture one guy. How effective is that?
Yeah, I'm reminded of films like, or programs like Eddie Eagle of the National Rifle Association, which ostensibly is to let little kids know what to do when guns are around. But the point really is to make us adjust to a lot of guns being around, make us accept that. And it seems to me that by, you know, having a torture in there, it doesn't look at, as you say, Ed, whether or not it works. And all the intelligence indicates it doesn't really work. But to make us accept that and to you know, have it just part of who we are and what our culture is, what a terrible thing for not only morals, but for real U.S. foreign policy and American interests throughout the world.
And it has to be clearly understood that the Pentagon and the CIA, with their film liaison programs, are using taxpayer dollars
right.
to subsidize militarism, to subsidize covert actions, and on the favorable depictions of them under the guise, or I should say the disguise, of mass entertainment.
Right.
And they like to say that Hollywood is liberal, but let me ask you something, Bert. Did you ever hear of the Department of Education gave Matt Damon a subsidy to make a film about how great teachers are? There's nothing
yeah.
like this on the left. It all goes to right-wing movies, to reactionary films that depict mayhem and violence as a form of mass entertainment.
Right.
And then, And then they turn around and they wonder, why are there these mass shootings? Why are people in America killing each other? And there's no correlation between how the Pentagon and the CIA are subsidizing films that support violence. There's no correlation at all.
Right. You know, it's amazing to me, really, what we have become. This nation, we're the beacon of the world, we used to be, and it's about freedom. And what better example of freedom than the freedom for the artist to create what he or she wants to create without undue influence? We think of the old Soviet Union, which, you know, didn't have that freedom. You couldn't have artists creating whatever they wanted and pushing the limits of expression. That's what art is supposed to be. It's not supposed to serve any particular interest. It's supposed to be made by the artist. And that's one of the things that we have celebrated about Hollywood here, and that the world has looked up to our culture because we have had that freedom. So this CIA-directed turning Hollywood into a propaganda machine, not the way I think most Hollywood actors and producers and writers and directors really want to go. But, of course, it takes a lot of money to make a movie.
And, of course, if you get access to those military bases like Pearl Harbor, you get to use those Black Hawk helicopters. You get to use U.S. Armed Services personnel at low cost,
right,
no cost. That shaves millions off of your bottom line. But the good news, Bert, is that we do not live in a complete fascist dictatorship, and there are different factions within the entertainment industry, and that's why the progies were created to shine a light and to focus on the positive movies,
right,
that are depicting the working class, that are depicting the oppressed, depicting resistance, and celebrating humanity. So it's
and there are
kind of
lots
of tension in Hollywood.
Yeah, and there have been some great, great movies in that category. I think of Good Night and Good Luck. Is that what it was called?
You know, that was about my namesake, Edward R. Murrow.
Oh, right.
And I was named after him because of his exposés on CBS TV of Senator Joe McCarthy.
Boo hiss.
And there are many examples that going back at least to the 1930s, if not further, there are many, many examples of a great humanistic, progressive, positive films all the way up until today.
Yes. Think immediately of Grapes of Wrath and so many other films. Well, let's look at the progies awarded for 2012. Many different categories. I hope we can get through them all. This has been an important discussion so far. There's one category, the Langlois, I believe it is, pictures deserving theatrical release in the U.S. Who is Langlois, and maybe you could just at least name some of those pictures.
You know, that is actually a very good question. Who was Henri Langlois? And he was the curator, I guess you could say, of the Cinémathèque that was in Paris and still is, although he's passed away.
Yes.
And he was responsible for reviving lots of lost movie, lots of lost movie.
Oh, nice.
And he was a really great film historian, and so this category was named after him because these are films that are participating critics in the James Agee Cinema Circle have seen at film festivals or on Netflix or something along those lines that are should be theatrically released in the United States.
There's quite a few on that list, and maybe I'll just go through that list, and I don't know if people can possibly download them or somehow see them if they haven't been theatrically released. Before I name them, do you know if we name them and people, you know, keep a record of this, is there some way people can access these films, or are they just totally inaccessible in the United States?
Well, that's a really good question. I could tell you that one of them, which is the one I voted for, it's called Toussaint L'Ouverture. And you talked about America being, for a long time, the beacon of the world.
Right.
I would say, Dan, around the time of the Haitian Revolution in, I guess, the early 19th century, one could argue that Haiti was the beacon of liberation and freedom in the world. That slave owner, some guy you might have heard of named Thomas Jefferson, Mr. Freedom Lover, was quaking in his boots at the thought of slaves rising up and taking over. And this is a biopic, a French-made biopic starring a Haitian actor. I believe his name is Jimmy Jean-Louis. And if you get a chance to see Toussaint L'Ouverture, I did see it at the Pan-African Film Festival.
Mm.
It's just a great, exciting movie. I should point out that a lot of these films, you could look them up on Netflix, which may or may not have them.
Right.
I don't know.
But they may. And let me go through the list. Vito, United in Anger, A History of ACT UP, which, of course, is about AIDS. Violeta Se Fu a la Cielos. Violeta Went to Heaven is the English name for it. The We and the I, Far from Afghanistan, as you said, Toussaint L'Ouverture. G-Dog, All Is Well, Roadmap to Apartheid, Sun Don't Shine, Welcome to Pine Hill, Pilgrim Song, How to Make Money Selling Drugs, The Patient Stone, and Diaz, Don't Clean Up This Blood. Sounds.
And this is one of the great things I love about the James Agee Cinema Circle. Although I live right here in the belly of the entertainment scene, so to speak, in Los Angeles, I don't see everything, and I really love it that some of our members who are located in various parts of the United States and overseas will, so to speak, tip me off and tip others off, hey, there's a really good progressive movie, you got to go see it. And so the only one on that list I personally saw was Toussaint L'Ouverture.
Well, it sounds very interesting. Let's look at something called The Lawson, the best anti-fascist film. What is that? It's a film called Lore, L-O-R-E?
Yes. I have seen Lore. It's by an Australian female director, but it's not in English. It's in German. And this category was named after John Howard Lawson, who was a Communist Party member, one of the Hollywood Ten, and he wrote some of the really great anti-fascist movies in the late 30s and during World War II. A couple of them, Sahara and Action in the North Atlantic, starred Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
And so Lore is the story of maybe she's 14, 15-year-old German girl. At the end of World War II, her parents were Nazi elite, and then as the war comes to an end in the final days, of course, Germany is plunged into utter chaos. And Lore, which is short for her full name, it's the diminutive of Hannah Lore, she has to somehow try and lead her even younger siblings across Germany to try and get to her grandmother's home. And along the way, she encounters a young man, maybe he's in his late teens or early 20s, whose identity papers reveal, assuming that this is actually his identity, that he's a Jew. And I think that he had been in the camps. And so he kind of helps this family along. So these children of Nazi elite become reliant for their survival and rescue on a Jew. And it's the whole style of the film gives you a very, very strong sense of alienation and estrangement.
Wow. The next one on the list is the Pasolini, the best pro-gay rights. One could say pro-equal rights. How to Survive a Plague. Have you seen that one, Ed?
I haven't seen that. I have not seen that one yet. I believe that I have heard about it, and I believe that it is actually a documentary, I believe, and it's what it is, and it features Larry Kramer in it. It is really the story of two activist coalitions, ACT UP. Which sure. Larry Kramer was very active with, and TAG, which stands for Treatment Action Group. And Bert, you probably remember that when the AIDS crisis emerged, Ronald Reagan wouldn't even say the word AIDS.
Hmm.
And it's about how these activists imposed their will through their activism on a negligent society, on a negligent government, in order to wake the world up about this disease.
It's fascinating. The next category, boy, it's interesting. There's a tie here for the Buñuel, the most slyly subversive satirical cinematic film. The tie is between Dark Horse and a very controversial film, Django Unchained. What can you tell us about this category?
Okay, well, first of all, Django Unchained, of course, is directed by Quentin Tarantino. And Django Unchained is a very militant movie about a slave who basically shoots his slave masters in order to liberate his wife. And it's the style by Quentin Tarantino is a combination of three things. The obvious one that everybody's talking about is a spaghetti western. It takes place in 1858. It's a spaghetti western, also a blaxploitation film like Superfly and Shaft.
Mm-hmm.
But I attended a private screening at the Directors Guild with Tarantino, who spoke about the film afterwards in an interview with Taylor Hackford. And Tarantino said that he was very influenced by the Wagnerian operas, The Ring Cycle. So the Kerry Washington character she's called Broomhilda, but she's the Broomhilda archetype that Siegfried rescues in the Ring Cycle.
Oh, interesting.
From, like, she's on a like a cliff or a ledge and surrounded by fire. And it's a very powerful, visceral film. You know, people in Tarantino movies, Bert, they don't bleed. The blood is spattered. The blood explodes. It's like from an anti-violence gun control point of view, the film could be even considered to be very reactionary. But on the other hand, it's about armed self-defense against slave masters.
Right.
And however, it should be stated that Django is not a revolutionary, although he's extremely militant in the sense that he uses armed struggle. He's not a revolutionary because, unlike, say, Spartacus, he's not trying to free all the slaves. He's trying to free one slave,
right,
his wife, Brunhilde. Right. But the whole style and technique of Django Unchained is kind of worthy of this Bunuel Award. And I haven't seen the movie it's tied with called Dark Horse.
I feel like I've heard of it, but what do you know about it?
I'll tell you. It's like a presidential conspiracy, assassination conspiracy fiction film. And the really interesting thing is who wrote and directed it is Roland Emmerich, who also co-wrote the script. He's the guy who did the Day After Tomorrow, that movie that kind of was sort of a prophecy about the huge waves that recently flooded Manhattan. And he did, in 2004, he did this movie predicting how global warming would ruin the environment and cause these disasters. And before that, he did a similar film in 2009 called simply 2012. But before in 1998, he made the movie Godzilla. Now, before you roll your eyes, and I can hear you rolling your eyes all the way in LA.
You're good.
And I say that there's something progressive about the 1998 Godzilla, and that is the film starts with this great explicit critique of the French nuclear testing in the South Pacific. And these nuclear tests at Mururoa Atoll are what caused Godzilla to be mutated and spawn.
Uh-huh.
So it's an anti-nuclear film.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. Well,
I'd love to see this Dark Horse.
Yes.
And looking at his credits, the next movie for this guy, Roland Emmerich, who is one of the most interesting directors out there, is called White House Down. Secret Service agent is tasked with saving the life of the U.S. president after the White House is overtaken by a paramilitary group. That's according to the Internet Movie Database. So this guy, Roland Emmerich, is making some really outrageous, interesting movies.
Oh, fascinating. The freedom of the artist is just such a great thing. And Sidney Poitier is up for the he won the progi called the Sergi, the Lifetime Progressive Achievement on or off screen. Why is that?
Okay, so first of all, just to identify who the Sergei is named after.
Eisenstein?
You mentioned about Soviet artists not being free and all that. And once Stalin consolidated his grip on the Soviet Union, that certainly became true. But it wasn't true at all times. I don't think it was true under Gorbachev. And I don't think it was true in the early days of the Russian Revolution, when arguably some of the greatest movies of all time were made. And it was a rare time in human history when the artistic avant-garde and the political avant-garde were united, and the political avant-garde, in that case, the Bolsheviks, had state power and resources to give to the cultural avant-garde. And Sergei Eisenstein was perhaps the best of these Russian Soviet directors, and he made a number of classics, including Battleship Potemkin.
Oh, yes, incredible movie.
Yeah, and so this award is named after this Lifetime Progressive Achievement on or off screen award is named after Sergei Eisenstein. And Sidney Poitier won, and the role of Sidney Poitier in the cinema, it's a very interesting role. Starting in the 1950s, he came to represent black people, in particular African American, although he was actually, I believe he was born in the Caribbean. He came to represent African Americans here and abroad, and his films underwent an evolution. Movies like Lilies in the Field, the first black man to win an Academy Award in anyone in the category of Best Actor for or that kind of religious movie, Lilies of the Field. And his films ran into a crisis once the pro-integration civil rights movement in the late 60s came up against the Black Power movement, and his roles, there was a lot of tension on or off screen for him. But Portier continued making movies. Later in life, he played Nelson Mandela, for example. And on Wednesday night here in L.A. at the Steve Allen Theater, I'm actually going to be introducing one of Portier's best-known, greatest movies, and I'm sure you've seen it, In the Heat of the Night.
I think I have, but I'm not sure.
Well, it was a long time ago, and Rod Steiger won the Oscar for that.
Oh, right. That was amazing, yes.
Yeah, Rod Steiger played the racist Southern cop, and Sidney is Virgil Tibbs, a northern police officer who happens to be down south when a crime is committed. I think he's visiting his old hometown, if I remember correctly. I haven't seen it for a while. And anyway, he joins forces with this racist cracker who develops a grudging respect for Virgil Tibbs, the detective. And there's one scene in the movie where the kind of civil rights integrationist Sidney Poitier kind of morphed into the Black Power screen image. And there's a racist white man who I believe it might have been Melvin Douglas, but in any case, I believe he slaps Sidney Poitier, and Sidney Poitier slaps this white man back. And he's like the richest man in town.
Hmm.
And that was like, that left audiences gasping.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Oh, well, interesting that the next category is the Robeson, of course, named after the great, amazing Paul Robeson. Best portrayal of people of color. And the winner of the Progie in this also won the same movie, Beast of the Southern Wild, Our Daily Bread Award, Most Inspiring Working Class Image. So it's got the Our Daily Bread and the Robeson. I haven't seen this movie. I really want to see Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Well, I made a point of seeing it, and it was at a film festival. Maybe it was the AFI Film Festival or the LA Film Festival. But I didn't see it there. I actually made a point of seeing it in the theaters. And I could tell you a bit about it. Yeah, I think it's the first feature film by a young filmmaker named Ben Zietlin. It's a very, very indie movie financially, in its sensibility and all this. And basically, it's about sort of an American subculture in, I guess you would say, in Bayou Country.
Louisiana.
It's down south. I believe it's in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about predominantly black, but there are also white members of the community who live in this kind of subculture. And they live, we would call it kind of like primitive. They live much more simply and low-tech than we do. They're living in what we would call shacks, although we should remember that one man's shack is another man's chateau.
True.
And it's in the Bayou Country. I think that's what it's called. I guess it's in the swamps. I've only been to Louisiana once, so I'm not very familiar with that part of the country. And then there's like a huge storm, and this remarkable little girl, who also won the Karen Morley Award for Best Actress from the Progies.
Right.
I'm going to take a shot at trying to pronounce her first name.
Good luck.
So spoiler alert: I might get it wrong. Juvenzune Wallace.
Wallace is easy. The queen
plays Hush Puppy, like this this six-year-old girl who kind of epitomizes the triumph of the human spirit, the will to survive.
Wow.
Now I should point out, like I said, I saw the film, and it has a very singular vision, and so on. I did not vote for it in most of the categories it won in. And there has been controversy over this film. If I remember correctly, I believe that the African-American author Bell Hooks has denounced this film because of the child abuse in the movie. I don't recall it being sexual molestation, but her father, Wink, who's played by Dwight Henry, beats his daughter, and I think that some people, as I said, it's kind of depicting a primitive subculture of sort of like what people from other parts of the country might consider to be quote unquote hillbillies. And since I live near Beverly Hills, I feel I'm entitled to use the word hillbilly. So some people have kind of looked askance at this. But having said that, it did win in three different progy categories.
Right. Well, I'd like to see it. I always look forward to this one, the Ziga, D-Z-I-G-A, the best progressive documentary, The Central Park Five. Haven't heard a thing about it. What is that?
Well, I have to tell you, this is a great movie. And if there's only one movie that we've been talking about so far that our listeners have to go see, it's The Central Park Five, and it's directed by the most popular of all of the TV documentarians, and that is Ken Burns, the guy who did the Civil War movie. On the Civil War series. And I not only got to interview Ken Burns, and you could read that interview at progressive.org, but I got to interview some of the Central Park Five. Now, who were the Central Park Five?
I haven't a clue.
Okay. I'll bet you money that you heard about their case. In 1989... while Mayor Koch was the head of New York City, and there were a lot of racial tensions, did you ever hear the Central Park jogger case?
No, it's coming back to me.
Yeah. Okay. Now, people remember that because it was not only front page news in New York, but it was national news. And,
sure.
And I grew up in New York, but I had long been gone by 1989. And I think I was living in Hawaii then, and I heard about it. And the Central Park jogger was a white woman. I think she worked for Wall Street. I think she was in her late 20s. And she was brutally assaulted and raped, obviously, in Central Park. So five young black and Latinos, all of them teenagers, were arrested and charged with what was called wilding.
Oh, right.
Okay, so is it coming back to you, Bert?
Oh, my goodness, it certainly is. And I believe there was some injustice carried
out. Well, you have a good memory, because what most people don't remember is that these guys who were all convicted and served out all or most of their terms, it turns out that the real rapist confessed, and it was proven through DNA, it was proven through the details he released that only the police, law enforcement authorities knew and wasn't publicly known, that he was telling the truth. The real rapist finally confessed, and these five boys who served out lengthy prison sentences and lost their youth in their innocence in jail, were completely innocent.
Wow.
And
must see that.
To do with this crime, they weren't even at the scene of the crime. It wasn't done by quote-unquote, a pack, the wolf pack, I think they called it. Very racist terminology, dehumanizing the alleged perps. It was done by only one person. And so Ken Burns and his daughter and son-in-law made this great stand-up-and-cheer documentary about this case, about this grave injustice. And the thing is, the injustice continues because these boys have sued, I think it's a civil suit, I think it's against NYPD, against the New York City government. They've sued, and their case has been languishing for years. And, you know, justice delayed is justice denied.
That's right, for
so
sure.
These five guys who were victimized by the racist media, by the courts, by the city government, by NYPD, still have not received any compensation for this miscarriage of justice. And I have to say that I got to meet the guys when they came to Hollywood for a big film festival. I think it was the L.A. Film Festival, if not the AFI Film Festival. Please forgive me for forgetting. And so I got to meet them privately when I interviewed them, and also at the Egyptian Theater and at an after party. And they are truly remarkable young men. And I have to say that even though they were victimized, they are not victims. They are survivors.
Wow. Fascinating. It's called...
You have to see this movie. If you only see one movie, The Central Park Five, it's just like... It's like a stand-up and cheer. You're sitting on the edge of your seat. Wow. And it's a documentary, but it has all the thrills and chills of a fiction film.
Fantastic. Well, we have just a few minutes left in a few different categories, and I definitely want to see this film. It's up for the best progressive foreign film, as well as being tied for the best picture. The film is called No, and I believe it's about something with regard to the Pinochet dictatorship in Chile.
Yes, absolutely. And basically, Gabriel Garcia Bernal is the star, and he did win the John Garfield Award for Best Actor from for the Progies. Anyway, his name is actually Gael Garcia Bernal, not Gabriel, and he plays an ad executive. It's based on a true story, by the way. This is like one of those things where a Hollywood screenwriter could never, ever come up with such a plot because they'd be laughed out of the executive suites. Nobody believe it.
Right.
And basically, Augusto Pinochet, who was the U.S.-backed dictatorship when Nixon and Kissinger conspired with him to overthrow the democratically elected socialist president, Salvador Allende.
Evil time.
And then he imposed a draconian dictatorial police state with lots of torture, imprisonment, and mass murders on the people of Chile. And by 1988 or so, world public opinion, after about 18 years of this brutal dictatorship, had turned against Pinochet. So seeking legitimization of his regime and self, I guess, he was pressured to hold a plebiscite, yes or no. Should Pinochet stay in power, yes, or should he leave? Which would be the no vote, and that's the derivation of the name of the movie, No.
Right.
So Gael Garcia Bernal plays this ad executive, and this is very interesting from a filmic point of view, who basically convinces the opposition, and this gets back to what we were talking about earlier, to use the powers of mass communications in an artistic, aesthetic and powerful way to persuade people. So instead of selling Coca-Cola or selling an automobile, this advertising executive sells the no vote against Pinochet. And I love this guy, Gael Garcia Bernal. You know, he played Che Guevara in The Motorcycle Diaries.
Oh, no kidding.
But he also played, most people forget this, but he played Che, the older Che, once he had become a revolutionary because The Motorcycle Diaries was when he was a young man, before he hooked up with Castro. But he played Che the Revolutionary in a two-part Showtime
great movie.
Miniseries.
Yes, loved
I believe it was called Fidel. And he was in Y Tu Mama Tambien, and Garcia Bernal is one of the great actors of the world, and he clearly has a progressive sensibility.
Right.
And when The Motorcycle Diaries came out, I was at a private screening of that where he spoke afterwards, and he's very impressive. He's a wonderful actor.
Well, I definitely want to see the film No, and that is tied for Best Progressive Picture with a film called Promised Land, which I know nothing about.
And that is starring Matt Damon, who co-made the film, as well as starred in it. And it's about a very timely, topical issue, hydraulic fracturing, which is better known as fracking.
Yes.
So it's a rip from the headlines story starring Matt Damon, one of our biggest stars. So you see, it's not all pro-Pentagon. It's not all pro-CIA in Hollywood. Like in America, there's a split between the right and the left.
Yes, indeed. And the left is very much alive, very much alive, as is the right as well. Well, this has been very, dare I say, entertaining, very informative. Now I have a list of films I got to go out and see.
And check out my interview with Oliver Stone, the cover story of the current issue of the Progressive magazine.
Oh, I'd love to do that as well. Ed Rampell, what a joy it is to have you on at this time of year. Thank you so much for presenting the Progies to us.
See you at the movies.
All right. Thanks very much for listening.
Everybody's in movies, doesn't matter who you are. There are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted to be alone. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you've hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. Such a lonely life. If you covered him. personas will still have style. And if you stamped on Mickey Rooney, he would still turn round and smile.